Welcome to the Membership Machine Show, talking you through your membership website from initial idea all the way to finished product. Here's your host, Jonathan Denwood.
Welcome back, folks, to the Membership Machine Show. This is episode 72. Yes, we've been going for a year and a half of this podcast. Got a really great special guest. We've got Sarah Sladjic. I butchered that, but as you know, listeners and viewers, my ability to destroy my guests' surnames is legendary. It's become a legend, Sarah. So don't take it too personally. In this podcast, which I've been really looking forward to, is that we're going to be discussing the silent killer. The silent killer of memberships for your associations, for your non-profits, whatever organisation, or if you're an individual entrepreneur, something you need to understand about this silent killer of your membership. It's going to be a great discussion. I'm really looking forward to it. So, Sarah, can you give us a quick 10, 20 second intro about yourself?
Sure. I'm Sarah Sladjic. I am the author of 6 books, including the latest book, Member Shift, Why Members Leave and the Strategies Proven to Bring Them Back. In addition, I am the founder and CEO of XYZ University, which started out as a generational research firm, and we've really expanded to offer courses and consulting and strategy development for organizations that are struggling to engage the next generation.
Yes, Sarah is the expert. She's written the book, so she knows. Watched a lot of her previous interviews, and I thought she would offer some tremendous insights and value to the listeners and viewers. But before we go into the meat and potatoes of this great show, I've got a couple of messages from our major sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Tired of hosting providers that can't handle high traffic loads? Convessio is here to help. Our platform can handle any amount of traffic, all without slowdown or crashing. With immediate Slack support, performance optimization, and a team that thrives on resolving technical challenges, your e-commerce business is in safe hands. Learn more about Convessio at convessio.com.
Hi there, tribe. It's Jonathan here, and I want to tell you about OmaSend. OmaSend is a great plugin that delivers SMS messaging and email messaging to your clients. If you're building a woo solution for your client and you're looking to provide a SMS functionality for them and great email, why don't you look at OmaSend? Got a great special deal. You can go to wp-tonic.com/deals, and they're offering 30% off the first 3 months. Plus, if you need any technical help or a migration, they're offering almost $1,000 to help migrate if you've got a group of clients that are looking for this type of service. It's a great offer. They're a great company. I highly recommend them to you. So, like I say, go over to the deals page on the WP Tonic website and you'll find more details there. Speak to you soon, folks. Bye. We're coming back, folks. I want to point out that we've got a great Facebook community where you've got any questions about membership, you can go and ask them. It's run by myself and my colleague Kurt, and you can find this on Facebook by putting in the Membership Machine Show group. We've got a great community there, and like I say, is anything about membership marketing, setting it up on WordPress, because you know we love WordPress, anything like that, it's a great resource. So go over there and join it. So let's go straight into it, Sarah. So only a small question to start off, Sarah. In 2024, what do you think are some of the biggest challenges association, society, or anybody that's got a general membership focus, community focus, stroke, website is facing, Sarah?
Well, I think that we're still seeing organizations needing to they're reassessing and reanalyzing, you know, where are we at in the aftermath of pandemic? And it seems like pandemic was a long time ago, but I think pandemic really rocked a lot of organizations. They were already in this era of disruption and change. You know, there's just been a lot of things that have happened in a short period of time that have impacted membership engagement. So things like economic shifts, consumer shifts, things like technological change, demographic change, and then adding in needing to pivot and try to engage people during a time of pandemic. And now we're finding, oh, and let's not forget things like retirement waves. You know, we've seen musical chairs happen within organizations and their staff and oh my, all the things, right? So what I'm hearing from a lot of associations and membership organizations is that they're really kind of saying, okay, are we healthy? Are we on the right path? Have we changed enough to stay relevant? Where are we really going? Are we change adaptive? Are we innovating fast enough? What's the next few years likely to bring? And are we on a path to be able to meet those changing needs and expectations in the marketplace? So I think it's just a real time of reflection and asking those really tough questions about strategy and whether organizations are on the right path.
Well, that was a fantastic answer. I think based on my own experience of working with associations, they tend to be very conservative organizations. And these are just generalities, though, so they don't apply to every organization. As you apply generalities to groups or individuals. But based on my experience, they tend to be conservative. They are obviously committee driven. That has a certain dynamics. So what are a couple of key things? It's kind of a follow through question. What are a couple of things that, based on your experience, because you said, you know, COVID and retirement and disengagement, which we're going to cover in the next question. But is one of the main reasons is that the actual people that are running the association, the top committee, they are unaware of some of the problems, or is it a lot of associations that you speak to, they are aware, but they have no roadmap on how to turn the ship around, really?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of awareness, but there's a huge difference between awareness and acceptance. You know, it is hard to... Change is difficult. It's really dang difficult. And what I have learned in my research of membership organizations is that, you know, let's just be brutally honest. There's a lot about running an association that we really don't know as fact. A lot of what we do when we are volunteering or we're on staff and we're charged with growing membership or growing the community, a lot of us borrow best practices from other business models that are not membership models, or we're passed down information and strategies that were used 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, but aren't relevant anymore. There just isn't a tremendous amount of study about things like change management, things like relevant strategies that are truly proven to engage people today. There's just a lot about membership that leaders don't know. And so then they fly by the seat of their pants. They try to create on the fly and it doesn't always work. And so I think there's a lot of awareness, a lot, but it's, okay, what do we do? What, we don't know what to do. Or we're trying these things, but they're not getting the results we want. And so people become frozen with fear.
Well, they need to buy your book, don't they, Sarah?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
One of the things, I totally agree with you, one of the things that I have recommended, and I don't know what your thoughts are going to be about this, is that I've taken, because I come from entrepreneurship all my adult life, I've run about four or five businesses that have been moderately successful. But I've stolen a lot of ideas from the bootstrap startup world to apply to membership about churn, about, because in the startup, the bootstrap startup world, some of the challenges of engagement, getting traction, stopping disengagement, which is for a startup, you get a leaky bucket. You know, you're spending money in either sweat equity or in actual paid advertisement to get people in, but you've got leaks in the bucket. So you're losing as many customers from the bucket as you're filling new customers in the top. So all these concepts from the startup world, I personally feel to some extent can be applied to associations and memberships, some of these key things. And these are some of the things that I've recently written about. And also I've blatantly stole your ideas as well, because as Picasso said, you know, the average artist only copies, the genius steals. So there we go. So what do you think about the concept of you looking a lot at the startup and especially the bootstrap? I've been influenced. He's a friend of mine, Rob Rowling, of Startups for the Rest of Us. I, like yourself, I mercilessly copy his ideas as well. But I always say that I do. So what do you think of that concept, taking some of the ideas from the startup world?
I love it. You know, I think that is a huge reason why membership organizations are struggling, because they've, or just organizations in general. Right now, you know, everyone's talking about relevance, retention, engagement. They're talking about it because we've seen these gaps to relevance and engagement widen and widen and widen. And they're widening because we really lost touch with our market. You know, there's so much about how we lead and learned to team build and learn to grow, whether we're talking about communities or companies, in this very siloed hierarchical model. So you cannot have a voice or a seat at the table until you have so many years of experience. Or you work in your department, you do your job. And, you know, all this segmentation and siloing and hierarchies and all this, it is just killing innovation. And it's killing, community building. And relationship building and being able to adapt and be nimble, and so many other important skills are lost when we rely on those old-fashioned models. So I think, yes, that entrepreneurial mindset and approach would serve membership organizations very, very well.
Well, let's go on to one of the major questions. So, you know, you talked about in your posts and that the silent disease, well, maybe it comes from me, maybe you did word it this way, but I kind of word it, the silent disease of disengagement. What does that really mean? You know, is it that people are, you know, the management, the main board, the committee are not aware of the dissatisfaction, I just about got that word out, of, it's early for me, Sarah. I haven't had my five cups of coffee yet. Is it that they're totally unaware of the, because that's what you've seen in some of your recent posts, and that seemed to be suggesting that they're just not aware of the membership dissatisfaction with what they're getting from the association. And what it, so maybe you want to speak about that.
Yeah. You know, I started in this career and researching this because I really observed early on in my career that I kind of had a light bulb moment. I was a young professional working in an association, and I had this moment where I started to think, wait a second, where are all the young professionals? Why is everyone on the board over the age of 50? You know, what is our succession plan? What are we going to do if we can't engage young people? What does that mean for the future of our organizations? And, you know, fast forwarding and thinking about here and now, so much has been done just in repetition. So much has been done out of habit. But also when we face a major change, or where it sounds like, you know, or seems like, or we realize things aren't going the way they're supposed to be going, we're seeing disengagement and decline. One of the first reactions to that is, let's make excuses.
Well, I do it all the time. So being the bedrock of AI cope with life. Yeah.
So I often hear, well, membership must be declining because young people, they're not joiners. You know, these types of attitudes or thoughts that may seem fleeting, but are actually really damaging, because we're prolonging our organizations from really, really diving in and answering the question, you know, what is it that is truly contributing to decline? Do we know it for a fact? And what are we doing to fix it? So I think those are critical questions to be asking. A lot of times, though, we're afraid of change. And so we blame someone else. You know, young people aren't joiners, or we tried that already, but it didn't work. Or, you know, kids nowadays, or whatever. We come up with all these excuses, and we never, ever really get around to the actual solution, problem solving, and it proves detrimental.
I think one of the other things, some of the things I've noticed dealing with associations, Sarah, is that I've physically gone to a couple of associations and they've had a media lab where they've spent tens and tens of thousands of dollars on video equipment. They've got plans to do regular video, podcasting, this, that, the other. And after 6 months, nobody uses it. It just gathers dust. Or they want, and don't get me wrong, this is important, that they want to have a Swiss Army knife CRM system that brings together all the various systems that are used in the association. And then they start looking at Salesforce, and then they realize the cost of installing Salesforce. And because they have nobody on staff that they would have to hire, and who deserves to be paid because it takes a certain level of knowledge. I'm not having a bash. But when they look at the cost of consultation and having people in the background, they move away from that idea quite rapidly. So is that something you see, whether it's like they're going to buy something, software, or they're going to buy equipment to solve something that's a person problem, a culture problem?
Oh, gosh. I see that all the time. Whether we're talking about, we'll just launch a Facebook page and the people are going to come running. We're going to launch a podcast. It's going to be amazing. We're going to have so many members, we're not going to know what to do with it. We're going to invest in this new software, a new CRM program, a new website, a new brand.
Oh, well, that definitely could work though, Sarah, a new website.
Well, it can. with, you know, any of these things can have a positive impact. The difference is, I think, you know, putting a lot of emphasis that this is, oh, this is our magic wand type of thing. It's just so incredibly important to remember that you're a membership organization in the first place. Membership means that you are fostering an emotional connection with people, a relationship with people. You're delivering solutions to problems for them. You're, you know, ROI, return on investment, real benefit for being a part of a particular community and spending their time with you and their money with you. But again, I think a lot of times when engagement begins to wane, we start to see people scramble. And it includes also, let's adjust the dues pricing. It's got to be that. Or let's open the doors. Anybody and everybody can come to this, not just members only, anybody. Let's start doing more events. And we're going to invest more in conferences now. And all these crazy solutions that really would be resolved if people spent even an ounce of that energy and time and effort on relationship building.
I also think, in the startup world, actually talking to the membership in a way, actually doing so, not the cliche attempt, but actual getting real research, because most business startups, they haven't got market product fit. This is the jargon of startups, Sarah, which I'm sure you're aware of. And I think a lot of association, they have, their association is the product, and they have the, and there's a misfit of what the membership wants and what the association. And if you don't do that research, you can try all these other concepts, but you're not dealing with this mismatch. What do you think of that?
Yeah. Oh, I agree 100%. I'm always telling associations, it's really interesting. I find a lot of associations kind of have this fear of, well, we can't survey people too much, too often, can't ask too many questions. We're going to be wasting their time, et cetera, et cetera. And I keep saying, what do you mean? if you're not asking those questions, you're guessing. And some of the times you're not right. You're guessing incorrectly. You're making assumptions or stereotypes or why not know for a fact? And again, if we're getting back to membership being about relationship building, how are you in a relationship with someone you never ever talk to?
I get a sense when I've been asked about this. I get a sense they really don't want to talk to their membership. I don't know if I'm being cruel there, but I just sense a lot of the time something, oh, well, I'll give them my spiel, but it ain't going to go anywhere. Like, I don't really feel they want to talk to their membership.
Yeah. I think sometimes it's seen as a burden. And that's something that needs to change. You know, that's part of the problem. That's why we have a disengagement and decline problem.
Right. On to the next one. And it's a bit of a bugbear for me, because obviously I do truly believe it, but I think it's a bit like in the membership world, there's this term gamification. Entrepreneur in the education entrepreneur space, because I have two worlds. I have a very wide spread of entrepreneur that hosts with us and use WordPress, but then I have my association non-profit clients. So I've spread all kind of two worlds here. But I hear this word community, like gamification, kind of utilized as the tool that will solve all problems, that will make my membership website even more successful. Well, the business plan isn't exactly work, but we add community to it. And it's seen as a way to solve all problems. But I've never What is community? What does that really mean, Sarah? Have you got the concept worked out to your own satisfaction? Because it's such a broad statement that it in some ways, I'm going to be very cruel there. It becomes a cliche, doesn't it?
Yeah, I agree. You know, I think it's easier for me to say what I think membership engagement is. Membership engagement is an emotional connection people have, and those that, you know, they feel a, you know, it sounds kind of woo-woo, but it's true. We find that when people feel truly inspired, included, feel that they have a voice, a seat at the table, a sense of empowerment, responsibility, they feel motivated, they feel some, you know, their heartstrings are tugged as a result of being a part of this organization. And so to answer your question about community, I think first you have to feel a sense of engagement, and that engagement comes from believing and trusting in what the organization does and believing and experiencing that the organization values your participation. But then what comes next? You start to not only foster relationship with the organization and the brand, but also with other people who share this value for this organization with you. And to me, that's community. I think when we get into nitty gritty about, you know, where community is, what community is, when community is, I think the important thing is to backtrack and say, well, wait a second. First and foremost, do our members experience an emotional connection with us, members of all ages, or do only certain sections of people feel that way, feel that connectivity to the organization and then eventually to one another?
I'm going to be a little bit controversial here.
So. All right, go for it. Right. I love it. Yes.
All right, because I am a little bit, because I do another podcast, Sarah, that I've been running for 8 years.
Yeah.
And it's in the WordPress agency freelance world. And I'm known to be a little bit controversial in that podcast. I totally agree with your statement, but I think with a lot of these complicated problems, there's a duality to them. Right? And I think, and you, it's in the world of my other podcasts, because I don't want my other podcasts to be boring, right? I'd rather come across as a bit of an arsehole than a guest or somebody to think I'm just a bore, right?
Yeah.
It's just part of my mentality, my childhood, the way I was treated. I'm a bit of a rebel. And I think this is the problem with a lot of content that's produced by associations and also entrepreneurs. You know, it's boring. But the problem is, if you want non-boring, you've got to be a bit edgy.
Oh, yeah.
And the problem with edginess is it can dive into toxicity.
Yeah.
In being quasi-political, and in this environment, I can see why people want to shy away with it, because I've shied away from it. But on the other hand, everything, in my opinion, has an element of politics to it. So how does an organisation, because I'm sure you've had these discussions, how does the content that the association produces that generates this community, this person-to-person that you've been talking about, how does it produce? Because so much content I see, so many organisations, is dead boring. Do you think, have you thought about this yourself and you got any insights? Or do you, and what do you think of what I've just stated, Sarah?
Well, I agree. It is boring. And our research shows that people are, that's part of the disengagement situation. Members aren't reading material. They've stopped reading newsletters and publications. And we see it really apparent among when we do data analysis of surveys and client research. We always break it down by age group. And we find this huge curve, right? Older generations love the print publications and they're okay with it, but it way declines for younger generations. And part of that is we're seeing that for young people, actually they produce, so Gen Z, little tidbit, Gen Z consumes and creates more content than any other generation. But also we know that Gen Z's brains have developed differently and that they obtain information and memories almost exclusively through videos. So high visual learners. And that's going to change how we educate and inform and train. We'll have to not be boring anymore. We're going to have to think creatively and think in terms of multimedia and in terms of shorter snippets, more visual, more graphic, all those types of things, right? And I think you're probably very well aware of that with your content interests. But I think also when we tie community and content together, it looks like news. It looks like interviewing people and getting their best practices, their case studies, their stories of what's working, their perspectives. Mm-hmm. And it's good if you have unique perspectives and people of different backgrounds and ages and skill sets all contributing. To me, that's when cognitive diversity happens. That's good stuff, right? That's where community is adequately represented. We're not just hearing one voice, one section, but all voices, and it creates a robust learning opportunity.
I totally agree with you there. I just want to, like in the WordPress world, Sarah, there's different silos, different groups around kind of different technology solutions in WordPress. They're extremely passionate, these groups. But over the last 18 months, in my opinion, some of these groups have become very toxic in they attack other individuals and other groups. So I think it's a balance, but I think it's the leadership of these communities, because maybe if the leadership had said, you need to toe down you need to back off. That's not right. And I think in some of these groups in WordPress, there hasn't been that leadership that's told people, mm-hmm. you need to back off. Because I think there's always a strain between producing content that's basically a yawn fest, mm-hmm. and stuff that engages. It may be a little bit spicy, but it's done in a good heart and have an organization that's open and welcoming, that doesn't focus on individuals. And because we are in that kind of world where you got online bullying and the worst aspects of online technology, haven't you?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it does require some facilitation on the organization's part or a leader's part. Just to very clearly have guidelines and rules. Like, we're here to share opinions, but not to be, you know, cruel.
No, but you know. Before we wrap up the first half of the show, Sarah, I think this is might be one of the reasons why organizations shy away, why they keep with the, what I call, it's like, this is only coming from me, Sarah, what I call as the collective yawn fest.
Yes.
Right. Of
the energy vampires.
Yeah, you know, they produce, it's very, you know, you've got to get the grammar totally right. Oh, also I've noticed with a lot of associations, especially professional organizations, and I do understand it, there has to be, they are obsessed with the court. There cannot be even the slightest grammar mistake. Every video, every podcast has to be of broadcast quality. This fixation about everything has to be perfect, which leads to nothing being produced.
Right, right. Exactly. It's putting so much pressure, but also it's getting away from authenticity. And that's what people want right now, is that trustworthy, authentic messaging and resource.
Right. We're going to go for a break, folks. It's been a fab discussion. It's met my expectations of where the discussion would go. We're going to have our break, folks. We will be back in a few moments.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back, folks. We've had a fab discussion. We've got a few more questions to cover areas. But before that, I want to point out that we've got a great course that's available on the WP Tonic website. If you're looking to set up your WordPress membership website and utilize the best technology and get some free advice, we've got a fab free course. If you go over to the WP Tonic website in the next week, we will have details about that. So let's go straight into this great discussion. So what's like one or two key things that organization can do that might start to turn the ship, the Titanic, that's going towards the iceberg of disengagement? Are there one or two, because I'm sure that you were asked that straight away. Sarah, we've hired you for consultation, but if there are one or two things we can do straight away. So are there any things that you kind of say that you that need to deal with, or is it really... Well, maybe you can give a group of things based, because there must be some generalities of the scenarios that you face.
Mm-hmm. Right. So one of the first things that I recommend, a couple things. Number one, if you haven't done research lately, it's time to do it. You need to survey. Survey members, we have a practice that we use where we really measure and analyze on certain drivers that we know are proven to yield membership engagement. But the point being, if you need to know what's keeping your members up at night, what they really, really value about your organization, what's proving to be a hurdle for them within their participation. As soon as we can identify some of those things, we can start to fix them. Wouldn't that be great? A lot of times, it's just really funny how some people are like, oh, I don't know if we want to know, or I don't know that we want to survey. And it just boggles my mind. But anyway, so first of all, research. Second of all, let's start breaking down some of those silos. So what I typically do is bring together a group of stakeholders, meaning... Let's bring a group of people of various ages, backgrounds, skill sets, years of experience in the organization. And they only need to have one thing in common, and that's that they're all really passionate about the association and the association's success. And then let's have a facilitated conversation and brainstorm and talk about the vision and the opportunities for this organization. When we're doing that, we're achieving a couple of things. We are beginning to basically build our own internal think tank, which can go on to become a real grassroots marketing effort for the association. But we're also beginning to learn and teach from one another and build cross relationships, because we're immediately getting rid of those silos to engagement and those barriers to entry. And one of the other things I would suggest too is really assess whether you are aligned with trends. And this one, I find a lot of associations say, oh, we're very aligned. Yes, we know exactly all the time. But then when you sit down and you start really diving in, it's like, no, we never talk about this stuff. I mean, really assessing in the next 5 years, who and what is coming next? Who and what is likely to disrupt your organization? Because if you're only planning for here and now, you're always going to be in this process of trying to hurry and catch up. The idea is to plan for, yes, for now, but to plan for sustainable growth. And that requires really being, you know, looking towards the horizon and trying to anticipate change and be ahead of it, be ready for it.
Yeah, a couple of areas that I think that are, based on my experience, that are kind of the initial things that are most acceptable. And then if you can build get some result and build a relationship, the other parts that I would suggest myself become more acceptable. And these are two areas, obviously educational training, online training, but training that is around getting results, you know, not building a course that is what I call war and peace online. getting a call, because a lot of your membership haven't got the time to do war and peace. So they all, based on my experience, want to produce war and peace, right? Because they see it's a way of value. So these, what I call micro courses with clear outlines that can improve the performance of the membership.
Yes.
And also online membership groups is that combining that with the micro course structure, I found that they can be initial wins where they start to get a little bit more engagement, and then your suggestions gets a little bit more credibility and you listen to a little bit more. What do you think of that?
I love it. And guess what? You're building community. You know, those relationships with one another. Because it's true that, you know, it might sound corny, but it's so true. If people have friends, mentors, people they admire, you know, if they have relationships with people in the organization, they're more likely to continue to be a member and to engage more often. So if there are opportunities like groups and things like that to help to foster those connections and that relationship building, it's a win-win for everybody. The win for the association because you're getting higher retention and engagement, and a win for your members because they're seeing greater value.
Yeah, because I found if you don't put in place the micro courses with micro outcomes, if you just build the group without that and others part, the groups, it's very hard to get engagement on the groups. But if you build some micro courses that have real outcomes, you find that people do want to join the group, and then it encourages initial discussion of what they've learned and that in the micro courses. So they kind of feed one another, but yeah. I might be wrong.
No, I think you're spot on. Yeah.
I don't normally hear that, Sarah.
Well, I do. I think you're spot on with that. I think, you know, we find that research shows people want the opportunity to learn something from the organization, be able to lead something in the organization, and be able to make a difference in the organization. So that learning piece should not be overlooked. Yeah, it's very influential.
So let's go on. Let's go on to the next thing. AI. You know, I utilize a lot of AI and I found it very helpful because I have a little bit of dyslexia. So I find utilizing AI tools have been, and I've spent a lot of time delving into it, and it's made a big difference to the output that I'm producing to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, what's your own thoughts about AI? I think it could really help associations, or it could make the situation a lot worse, because I think they can just produce a lot more yawn fest stuff. The possibilities of producing comatized material is endless with AI. So how do you think, what's your own views of AI? How can it benefit associations or not? And how do you see it, things changing in the next year, 18 months around it? Because I wrote a bit about AI strategies of association, and I got a fair bit of feedback about it, because that I judge I judge there's quite a few organizations thinking about this. So what's your own thoughts, Sarah?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm going to be totally transparent and say I'm not an AI expert. I have been slow to.
There's a lot of people say they are, but there's very few that actually are.
Yes. But I will say, you know, I think that, yes, I think AI is a fantastic tool. You mentioned a great example of something, you know, there are aspects where AI can fill in, do tasks that, can make things very turnkey. It can make things more accessible, so on and so forth. I think that's fantastic. What I'm cautious about, and what I urge associations to be careful about, is AI is not creative, not really, and AI is not relationship oriented. So we have to be very careful to make sure that if we're using AI, it's to use it to enhance the operations and some of the reach and some of that. But it is so important not to have it replace. You know, as I was mentioning previously, younger generations especially, they want that authenticity. It's that need to trust an association that they belong to is so incredibly important. The need for emotional connection is key to membership engagement. So we have to be human, right? We have to get quirky, not be a yawn fest, be unique and different and colorful and fun. I advise so many organizations I work with. One thing that I find it is the most lacking, it's fun. It's like I will ask clients, when's the last time you did something fun? And I'll get these strange looks like, we don't have time for fun.
I imagine you get some very strange looks when you mention the word fun with association.
Isn't that sad? Like, who wants to be part of an organization that isn't fun? It taps into a human need, I think. But anyway, so yes, I think AI is going to continue to evolve. I hope it becomes a fantastic tool to enhance, but not to replace the real work of associations.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, but I've been thinking about this, and I think not only associations, but people that are running, entrepreneurs that are running their own individual membership, what you don't understand is the amount of content if you're going to move the ship, the amount of content that you have to produce, because I'm only a small business with a small team, but if you knew the amount of content that I was knocking out each week, Sarah, I would imagine you'd be impressed, actually. I would hope you would be. Because on average, we produce about 30 articles a month, and I do about 30 videos a month, and 3 podcasts a week.
Yeah, that's not. You're a content engine.
Yeah. And it's the main thing that I've utilized to move the business forward.
Yeah.
Over the past 4 years. So I think association don't realize, if they're going to really get engagement, really build community, the amount of content that they're going to have to produce to churn the conversations I have. They are just not aware. Now, they've also got this, as I touched earlier, they've got this complex that it has to be top quality. Everything's got to be top quality, right. Professional quality. This is around this duality that I mentioned. So they need to get over that to some extent. But they also, obviously there's a cost, you know, they can't normally employ enough people. Well, I say that, but then they're prepared to throw like $500,000 to $1 million on getting Salesforce set up. And then they, 6 months later, they're hardly using it. So I'm not sure about that, but you can't employ an army to produce the content. So that's what I think AI, but it all has to be edited. It all has to be read. I use it, but I mix it with video, podcasting, and then I'll edit the content, add to the content. And that's how I deal with it. And that's what I would suggest to people that consult with me. But I just don't think, and that's where I think the greatest benefit could come from, because you could enable an association to get over the hump and realise they've just got to produce a lot more content. But if it's content that's a total yawn fest, that will exacerbate the problem. So they've got to understand that That's the duality. Is this making any sense, Sarah?
Yeah, absolutely. I will say, as I mentioned, Gen Z consumes and creates more content than any other generation. So you might be a Gen Z, Jonathan, because
I'm too old. I'm a X. I'm 1 year into be X generation. I'm
all right,
boomer.
You are Gen Z-ish in that you produce a lot of content. But you know, something I urge associations to consider is, you know, are there opportunities in your association to include Gen Z in that content creation? Invite them to do some videos or some blogs or podcasts, whatever the case may be, social media takeovers, article writing, research. They enjoy it. It's an opportunity for them to learn, to meet other people in the community. So, it doesn't have to be perfect and so professional and polished. We're in a different era now. So that
Has its place with certain content, hasn't it? Certain content has to be polished and
certain, yes.
It's finding this balance. I think this has been the thread of this discussion, hasn't it? Mm-hmm. That finding a medium middle road for each association. But I found, and I think you've hinted at, there's a surprising, well, it's not surprising in some ways, resistance, isn't there? There's a crying need. They know there's change, but when you get into the nitty gritty of it, I get a lot of resistance. So I've learned just to do it in baby steps, because otherwise you're just going to be blanked off straight off.
Definitely.
Well, let's end up with one of my favourite questions. So, if you had your own time machine, like H.G. Wells, Sarah, and you could go back to the beginning of your career and business journey, what one or two pieces of advice that you would love to tell yourself, Sarah?
What's that? See, you asking me that question means that I've reached a certain age, because you don't get asked that question when you're a young professional. It's like, oh my goodness, now I'm one of the old ones.
I don't think you're old. I'm old. You've got plenty of life in you, from what I've seen.
Oh my gosh, I hope so. All right, let's see. If I had to go way back. You know, I think I would say trust your gut. That would be number one. Trust your gut.
Yeah.
Your intuition is usually spot on.
I'd like to remark before you go into your second one, you're so right, because all my balls ups. I knew there were balls up by my intuition at the beginning, but I made so many excuses about a situation or individual that looking back, it's hilarious, isn't it? It was all there right in front of you, but you made so much trash out to you.
I think we second guess ourselves and sometimes for years. So yeah, I think trust your gut, and closely related to that, my second piece of advice would be, it's okay to fail. Fail fast. You know, when you fail, you're learning something. If you never fail, you're not actually improving. So I think, it's okay to fail. Fail fast. Get up, dust yourself off, and move on, right? Jump back in there.
Yeah, I tell you, I'm a duality because, like I say, I've got a bit of dyslexia, but I'm also a perfectionist. And that has not always served me well. But I do, my best side is I'm a plodder. So I'm quite happy to grind it out. But I can be a bit of a perfectionist about my own performance. And that is a duality that I've had to kind of back off a bit and be a bit more understanding of myself. So, Sarah, I think it's been a fab discussion. To say that we've covered a lot of ground.
We did. We certainly did. Yes.
So is there a hope for the association that's got disengagement?
Oh my gosh.
Do they need to go off and buy your book? So
yes, buy the book, definitely. But yes, there is hope. And, you know, I think the most important thing to remember is if disengagement's happening, it's fixable, because one thing, even in this era of change, one thing that will never change is our desire to belong. That's part of our, you know, innate human desire. We want to belong to something. And associations were built for belonging. So if we can just do the research, get relevant, build community, you're going to see growth. It's inevitable. You heard it here, folks. It's inevitable.
So, Sarah, what's the best ways to learn more about your company and about yourself? What's the best?
You can check us out at xyzuniversity.com or drop us a line at hello@xyzuniversity.com.
Thanks so much, Sarah, for coming on the show. Hopefully, later in the year or the beginning of next year, you will come back on. We have another feast of knowledge. We've got some guests up in May coming on the show, and we've got some great podcasts that will give you value in the next couple of weeks, listeners and viewers. We will be back next week. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks for listening to the Membership Machine Show. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes, and leave a rating to support the show. Until next time.